The Gulf Legislative Advisory Board was created by Executive Order 2020-06. That order is publicly available for viewing on the governor's website. Today's meeting is an official meeting of the board, is open to the public, and will be run in a manner compliant with RSA 91-A. Today's meeting is also being recorded, as we've said, and should you be a speaking participant and not wish to be recorded, you may disconnect now or at any time. The recording from today's meeting will be transcribed and posted on the GOFER webpage. My name is Jerry Little. I am Director of the Governor's Office for Emergency Relief and Recovery, and I will facilitate today's meeting. Because the board is meeting by phone, under RSA 91A, there are some initial logistics that we need to establish. First, each of us must state our names, where we are located, and who is with us in the room. We'll do that with a roll call, and I'll start by example. I am Jerry Little, director of the Gopher in Gopher's office at One Eagle Square in Concord. With me are Rhonda Hensley,
Nancy Smith,
Sean Thomas, and did I say you, Rhonda? Rhonda Hensley. Sorry about that. Senate President Donna Soucy.
This is Donna Soucy. I am at my home in Manchester, and I am alone.
Thank you, Senator. House Speaker Steve Shurtleff. Speaker Shurtleff. Maybe five star, Mr. Speaker.
Office, State House, and I am alone.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Thank you.
Senator Chuck Morse.
This is Chuck Morse. I'm in my office in Atkinson, New Hampshire, and I am alone.
Representative Dick Hinch.
This is Dick Hinch. I am in my office in Merrimack, New Hampshire, and I'm alone.
Senator Lou D'Alessandro.
This is Lou D'Alessandro. I'm in my home in Manchester, and I'm all alone. Terrible, but I'm all alone.
Thank you, Senator. We're with you.
Thank you.
Representative Mary Jane Wallner.
This is Mary Jane Wallner. I'm in my home in Concord, and I am alone.
Senator John Reagan.
I'm in Deerfield by myself.
Thank you, sir. And Representative Erin Hennessy.
This is Representative Hennessy. I am in my home in Littleton, and I have three minor children with me.
Thank you all very much. As we move through our agenda today, each board member and anyone else speaking is asked to identify themselves before speaking. And should you choose to take any votes today, they must be done by roll call following the process we just used. Finally, before we begin today's presentation, please remember to use five star if you would like to ask a question. In addition, presenters are asked to also hit five star when their turn comes up, as that allows us to identify your line and unmute it for you. Senator Morse, do you have a question for us, sir?
Yes, and thanks for being home for this meeting, Jerry. I was speaking with Senator D'Alessandro about an hour ago, and we were both talking about we'd like to know the balance that is in the account that you believe is in the account.
I believe the question is, can we provide you with the remaining funds of the total $1.25 billion of CARES Act money that was allotted to the state of New Hampshire? Are you looking for the remaining unallocated amount?
Yes, and maybe you need to explain if you're telling me the unallocated, like, there might be two different definitions of unallocated, because, I mean, when you put $50 million in an account, has it all been spent? But I think we're looking for the total. You know, if the governor's moved out $50 million, we should assume that it's probably been spent at this point, unless we want to have a different meeting. But anyhow, yes, that's what I'm looking for.
I know the question, and I am going to stall just a little bit, see if we can't get one of our finance people to join us in here. I believe that the figure you're looking for is approximately $230 million, roughly. But I would like to get you a closer number, and before we drill down on that a little bit, I'm going to complete reading the meeting script that will bring us into the start of the meeting, if that's okay. But we'll get back to that, I promise you. The last time we met was on Wednesday, July 1st, 2020, and you asked to hear updates and presentations from Manchester Mayor Joyce Craig regarding the Fisher Cats, as well as VFA Director, Executive Director James T. Wallace, regarding the GAP fund and the possibility that Fisher Cats might fit in there. You also asked for continuing updates on summer camps, the New Hampshire Child Care Recovery Stabilization Program, funding status, New Hampshire Housing Relief Program, and nonprofit grant program updates. Recently, we added on our agenda for today, Canaan Town Administrator Mike Sampson, as well as he was the chairman of Massacoma Community Health Center, and Peter Ferber, who are going to talk to you about their concerns relative to their local community health care group. And then finally, Commissioner of Department of Transportation Victoria Sheehan will be joining us to talk about intercity transit requests. We apologize for the great number of emails you've received in the last couple of days. We want to assure you that you have all the materials and enough time to look at them before each call. I think Rhonda Hensley has been doing a good job keeping everybody updated. You should have received additional emails this morning. And if you didn't receive anything, just let us know, and Rhonda can send it to you now. I think we'll begin. Senator Morse, we can probably give you a closer figure, at least a better understanding of the current balance. We've been joined by Steve Giovanelli, who is our chief of finance here at the Gopher office, tracks all the numbers very closely. Steve, Senator Morse's question was, and I believe he and Senator D'Alessandro had been speaking about it today, they were wondering how much money's left in the checkbook, basically, that Gopher has authority over, what's allocated, what's not.
We've allocated $1 billion, and we've got a quarter billion left unallocated, roughly. The exact unallocated number is $249,743,750. So we've got just south of $250 million left unallocated.
Question, Senator Morse?
Yeah, I have one other question, and only because I haven't seen any written documentation on it. In the last couple of days, I've heard that we can use this money on state budget issues. Is that true or not true?
This is Nancy Smith, Senator Morris. I have heard there are discussions about allowing that flexibility in the and going on at the federal level, but as far as I know, it hasn't happened yet.
Thank you.
Further questions about the current balance of available CARES Act funds in Gopher? Seeing none, I think somebody has to should put their phone on mute. I'm hearing a lot of background noise. Then we will move forward with the agenda as presented. The first item up for conversation is the Fisher Cats funding and masks. Senator D'Alessandro, this item is on the agenda at your request. Would you like to do an introduction, sir?
Yes, I would. Thank you. Thank you very much, Jerry. And again, thanks for coming back from your vacation to convene the meeting and to facilitate the meeting. I appreciate that very much. Yes, I've got two items that I've asked to be put on the agenda, and the first is the Fisher Cats, and that's the local minor league baseball team that plays in Manchester and has an affiliation with the city based on dollars that are spent in terms of revenue for the park. Now, Mayor Craig is on the phone also, and I think can be very helpful. I'm looking to get $1 million for the Fisher Cats for the simple reason that they don't have any ability to make any money this year. The parent team, the Toronto Blue Jays, has canceled all of the activities in minor league baseball. The Fisher Cats have no way to raise any revenue, and yet they have significant expenses. They've been an extremely important partner for the city of Manchester. The rental of the field is one of the most significant features because it's a financial transaction. But over the years, the Fisher Cats Foundation has raised over $6 million and distributed that in the greater Manchester area to needy causes. They have opened the field during this crisis for high school graduations. All of the Manchester high schools use the facility for graduation. Goffstown High School used the facility for graduation. In order to provide some entertainment, they've opened the field for the fireworks on special evenings. They have been a very significant player in the city of Manchester. I mean, economic viability. It's a wonderful presentation. It's a very easy way to take your family, have an enjoyable event at the park. It's affordable. It's accommodating, and they're a most significant asset to the state of New Hampshire. And as I say, they can't make any money. As a matter of fact, if you bought tickets and you asked for refunds, you'd have to get the refunds. But if you've not accepted the refunds, they've given you a bonus for next year, but they can't count that money in as dollars gained for next year because it'll be spent this year. The pressure on the team is really extreme. And as I say, they're a very valuable asset not only to the city of Manchester, but to the state of New Hampshire. An integral player in the social activities of Manchester, great for the community in terms of what they do and what they give, and they need help to survive, and it's very, very significant and very, very important. Mayor, have I articulated the issue? What have I missed? And of course, the city derives the funds from the rental, and that's a key ingredient in the city's budget process. So if I missed anything, Mayor, could you fill it in?
Sure. I'm happy to. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, great. So first, Senator D'Alessandro and the Gopher Advisory Board, I just want to thank you for inviting me to participate on the call today and for considering the impact that COVID-19 has had on the New Hampshire Fisher Cats. The Fisher Cats are a staple here in the city of Manchester and our entire community, and it's an asset to our state. Over the past 15 years, the Fisher Cats have had a significant positive impact on our local residents, businesses, and restaurants. And as Senator D'Alessandro mentioned, they've contributed almost $6 million in donations to area nonprofits during this time. And although to a certain extent expected, it was devastating news when we learned at the end of June that minor league baseball was canceled for the 2020 season due to COVID-19. And as a result, the Fisher Cats will probably be closed through April of 21, and they're facing right now a loss of about $5 million in revenue. So the City of Manchester and the Fisher Cats have a long-standing partnership, and as a result, the Board of Mayor and Aldermen right now are considering the Fisher Cats' request to defer their next two payments to the city totaling $920,000. As a result, the city would be short on the revenue side, and we'd have to make it up on the expenditure side, most likely by holding off on hiring or holding vacancies. And given all of the unknowns that everyone is dealing with as a result of COVID-19, it would be tremendously helpful right now if we could count on those two payments. So it's important to note, and some of this the Senator mentioned, that during this challenging time, the Fisher Cats really have stepped up to the plate, and I do, the pun is intended. They continue to meet the needs of our community by hosting many high school graduations, youth baseball camps, fireworks, concerts, and more in a safe, organized, and professional manner. We're very, very fortunate to have the Fisher Cats as a member of our community. Their commitment to Manchester and to New Hampshire is invaluable. And again, I want to thank the Gopher Advisory Board for inviting me to speak today and for your consideration of their request.
Senator D'Alessandro, anything else you would like to add regarding the Fisher Cats?
Thank you. Can everybody hear me? I think when you have something that's so important to the vital economic life of the city, and the number of jobs that are created, and the real complement right across the board, we've got to work to try to help these people. This is an unbelievable situation. And I might say that look at what's happening in Major League Baseball as we speak. They are trying to get it going, and I doubt that that's going to happen. And look at the number of professional athletes that are refusing or deferring playing because of the effects of the virus on the teams. And think of the financial effect that's going to have nationwide. And here we are confronted with something in our city, in our state, that we can deal with, that we can help with, and we have the capability to do that. Now, we've helped a lot of people, as we should. The $1.25 million was given to the state of New Hampshire to help people and to help the economy recover and to sustain what we have in place. And I think this is a very worthy cause that we should consider supporting. I think the mayor articulated the issue quite clearly and succinctly. They're a player. They're a vital player in the social fabric of our community. The fact that they've raised over $6 million and donated it to needy organizations, that's really a tribute to the management of the team. And these teams work on very, very slim, very, very slim margins. And the big deal for Manchester, of course, is the rental of the field. And that's a key ingredient in the operating budget for the city of Manchester. So with that, Director Little, thank you very much. I appreciate the willingness of the committee to hear our thoughts with regard to this issue. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator D'Alessandro and Mayor Craig. Thank you very much. I see we have a question from Representative Dick Hinch.
Yes, good afternoon. Thank you, Jerry. So I have two questions. Number one, am I correct that the Fisher Cats did receive $350,000 from the Main Street Relief Fund? And secondarily, it's my understanding that there is some financing available to them. And then my last question is, my understanding of the ask for $1 million is an effort to pay the property tax for this year. And has the city thought about deferring that payment of the property tax in light of what's going on and the need that the Fisher Cats have?
Representative Hinch, I can confirm that the Fisher Cats did receive the $350,000 maximum amount available from the Main Street Relief Fund. I can't speak to whatever other sorts of financing may be available to them. Possibly a representative of the team on the phone or somebody who can speak to them about that. And I think I'll let the other folks pick up on the other issues as well. Does anybody, Senator D'Alessandro, wish to speak to either of those points? I think there was a question about Mayor Craig, there was a question about whether the city of Manchester might let their tax payments ride for a little bit.
So they, the Fisher Cats actually don't pay property taxes. It's a city-owned property. The money that's owned, owed to the city is a lease payment and it's debt service.
Thank you.
And can that debt service be deferred?
No.
Are you able to explain why?
But I have our finance director here, Sharon Wickens. She can.
The debt service is a bond issuance by the full faith of the city of Manchester. And there is no deferral for debt service payments that they are due. The bondholders expect them. They bought these bonds. There's no deferment on them.
And the amount of the bond to be paid?
The amount left on the bond now is about $12.2 million. And these lease payments are to help offset some of the debt payment that's due.
Thank you, Sharon. Any further question, Representative Hinch?
No, that's fine for now.
Thank you. We have a question from Senator Reagan.
Thanks, Barry. We have a lot of confusing information given us here about $6 million of lost revenue, which is not a loss, and then we have a suggestion that there's 25 full-time jobs there that people won't get paid, but there's no details in this as to exactly what's happening. And they're looking for, I think Lou asked for, $1 million, and $1 million is just to pay the city of Manchester, so I wish they had just said that. I could support an honest request, but all this $6 million and a $12 million bond and all this other stuff, they're not detailed expenditures, and I don't like how they presented this.
Thank you, Senator Reagan. Senator D'Alessandro, do you have a question? Senator D'Alessandro.
Okay, the $6 million that I referenced is the $6 million that the ball club has raised for not-for-profits in the city of Manchester. That's the six million dollars that I mentioned. And I think that someone from the ballpark might be able to go into other financial situations. But they'll produce no revenue for this year. No revenue. Zero revenue. The Toronto Blue Jays have said no minor league baseball. So the field lies fallow at this point in time. And the request is really to aid the city of Manchester. Obviously, that rental arrangement is significant, obviously, and very, very important to the city of Manchester. It reflects on the city's operating budget. And there's the genesis of the request that I made. Now, they may have received some money from other sources, but what I'm aware of is the problem that they're having as they exist right now, and their inability to raise any money the traditional way through attendance at the games and things of that nature. So it would have a dramatic effect on the city of Manchester. Manchester is the largest city in the state of New Hampshire. We have about 10% of the population of the state.
Senator D'Alessandro, I believe we have Mike Ramshaw, who is the president of the Fisher Cats, on the line. Would it be okay with you if we brought him in at this point in time?
Absolutely, Jerry. That's a great suggestion. Thank you very much. Yes, sure. I defer to the president of the Fisher Cats. Thank you.
Mr. Ramshaw, are you with us this afternoon?
Yes. This is Mike Ramshaw, president of the Hampshire Fisher Cats. Thank you very much. Can you guys hear me?
Yes. Have you heard the conversation that just went on?
I did. Yes, I did. So if I can explain the going back to the Main Street Relief Fund, the grant that we had received, we did get the maximum, the $350,000, received that on a Thursday, and then on Monday of the following week, had to deliver that to the city of Manchester to pay our June rent payment of the $420,000. So we took the $350,000 and then took an additional $110,000 from what we had here at the ballpark. To explain the losses, you know, Major League Baseball canceled the season, which in effect canceled the minor league baseball season. They were not going to feed players to the minor leagues. So we took 70 chances. You know, our greatest opportunity to generate revenue during the year is gone now. And we've been trying to do different things in the community to raise money to just cover our expenses. Unfortunately, we did receive the PPP loan. We kept our staff on full until July 1st and unfortunately had to furlough roughly half of the staff. And now we're working to create the events that the mayor and Senator D'Alessandro mentioned, whether it's movie nights, fireworks, camps, trying to stay a part of the community and let people know that we're here as a resource and so that we're not forgotten. I mean, if you think about it, it's going to be almost 18 months without baseball, in the state of New Hampshire. The Fisher Cats are definitely important to the city, but the state. There's a lot of different programs that we provide to give back to different organizations, whether it's nonprofits, youth leagues, schools, and camps throughout the entire state. So due to the pandemic and not having these events during the normal that we normally would have pre-COVID, we're facing a loss of nearly $5.5 million in revenue with considerable fixed expenses. And then, the economic assistance is needed to allow us to bridge the gap to return in 2021 to be a major economic driver for the state of New Hampshire for many years to come. This isn't a short term, right? It's not next year all of a sudden we come back. It's going to take time to get over there, and we want to make sure that we're able to still be in a position that we're able to be there for the city and the state of New Hampshire.
Thank you, Mr. Ramshaw. Questions for Mr. Ramshaw? Representative Dick Hinch?
Yes, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Ramshaw. So I just want to make sure that I have my notes correct. You did receive $350,000 max payout from Main Street, which you used to pay for the June payment to the city, and as I understood it, that left $110,000. Is that correct so far?
Correct. We took the $350,000 from the Main Street and then paid from what we had, because we've had some partners that have been able to, that had confirmed that they would stick with the amount that we provide, that for the sponsorship that we're able to keep on hand, and we use that to make the difference to make the payment to the city.
Okay, and then as a follow-up, if I may, the ask from at least Senator D'Alessandro, I'm not sure it's the same ask as yours, is for $1 million to be allocated from COVID. And if I understand that correctly, that helps in a huge way in going towards the deferrals for the next payments that are due. Can you tell us the amount of those payments and when they're due and what the $1 million then pays for?
Yes, sir. So the next payment is due to the city in October for $460,000. And then there's another one that's due in June of 2021, also for another $460,000. So that makes up $920,000 in total.
So the million-dollar ask, if that's the same number you're using, and again, I'm not sure it is, takes you through payments to the city through next June, meaning 2021. Is that correct?
That is correct, sir.
And is that how you would use the $1 million?
Yes, sir.
Okay, so I guess my next question back to the mayor is, can the city do anything to offset some or all of this $920,000?
So the question is coming before the board on Tuesday, whether the city can defer those funds. But as I mentioned when I spoke initially, it would be it would affect our revenues negatively, and we may have to make it up on the expenditure side. And most likely the only way that we would be able to do that would be holding vacancies or holding off on hiring employees that are needed. And given all that are unknown as a result of COVID, you know, we are seeing a decrease in revenues on other side in other ways. So we don't know, you know, the true impact of all of this at this point.
But there has been significant money from COVID sent to the city so far, yes?
We cannot use any of the funds that have been sent to the city to cover a loss in revenues.
Understood. Thank you.
Other questions for members of the Legislative Advisory Board relative to the Fisher Cats question? We also asked James Key Wallace, the Executive Director of the New Hampshire Business Finance Authority, to join us for this conversation today. James, are you on the phone?
I am. Good afternoon, Jerry.
Good afternoon, James. Do you have anything to add to the conversation about the Fisher Cats? Have you contemplated them at all in the context of the GAP fund?
Yes, I'd be happy to talk a little bit about that. I should say a couple things right off the bat. We are approximately halfway through the application period for the GAP fund. You know, I'm not at liberty to discuss any individual's application or the, you know, the details therein until, you know, we're through the process. But I can talk about the GAP fund in general terms, and then certainly how it affects the Fisher Cats eligibility to apply. The other thing I should say right off the bat is we certainly recognize the significance of the Fisher Cats to Manchester and the state as a whole, and we recognize the unique circumstances that they find themselves in. So the GAP fund, for those folks that don't know, is a $30 million allocation from the CARES Act designed to primarily help for-profit organizations and certain types of nonprofit organizations who were unable to access help and relief from already, you know, existing programs that have come and went. Or, you know, those folks who had technical glitches, who couldn't get through the process, or maybe there was an error on their application that resulted in them getting an amount that was different than what they expected. It's not really designed to, you know, provide more relief to organizations that already received their pro rata share under the Main Street Relief Program, but rather catch those folks who weren't helped. You know, that being said, it is designed to be flexible, and, you know, there are certainly going to be situations that, you know, organizations, you know, perhaps like the Fisher Cats, you know, I can't commit one way or the other, but, you know, have truly exceptional and extenuating circumstances that we'll take a look at. From an eligibility perspective, the Fisher Cats are certainly eligible to apply. It's designed to be very flexible as to who can apply. You know, the real criteria are that you have to be a New Hampshire business, have at least, you know, more than one employee. It's not for a self-employed individual, and that you're not permanently closed, that you were in operation prior to March of this year, and that you have been affected by COVID-19. And they certainly tick all those boxes for eligibility. It is a grant program. You know, I will say the amount of the pool, $30 million, is less than one-tenth of the size of the Main Street Relief Program, which was a $400 million pool. The maximum amount someone could receive under the Main Street Program was $350,000. So you can imagine just mathematically with a pool that's less than a tenth of that size, the amount of grants coming out under that program are, to be very candid, unlikely to fulfill the $1 million need that the Fisher Cats have, as much as I recognize, you know, how critical it is, just because that represents that one amount, you know, a huge amount for any single entity to get out of a limited pot of funds. So, you know, they're certainly eligible to apply, and we'll take a look at what we get, and absolutely take into consideration how important they are. We also have to deal with the constraints of what's available in the fund.
Thank you very much, James. Any questions from members of the committee for Mr. Key Wallace? Any other comments or questions from members of the committee relative to the Fisher Cats situation? That is the full list of the folks that we have lined up to speak to you today about this particular issue. Senator D'Alessandro, do you have any last comments you would like to make on this topic?
Thank you, Chairman Little. I think people know clearly what the situation is. They know the magnitude of the situation as it relates to the city, and the fact that this entity, unlike many others, has no ability to make any money. They have no chance to do anything for this entire season. And there will be no minor league baseball, period. And I think that's a very different situation. It's unique in that context that they're going to have no ability to provide the opportunity that they have been providing to New Hampshire citizens for the last 14 years. That's a rather unique situation. Hence, the need is quite dire. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator. So this was sort of part A of your two-part question. The first was about funding. The second part was about masks.
Yes. Should I give you the second part of my two-part?
Yes, please.
I think, and I've had conversation with my colleagues. Some agree with me, some disagree with me, and I appreciate that because that's in the spirit of democracy. I think it's incumbent upon us to put aside money for masks for people in the state of New Hampshire. I firmly believe that the governor should mandate masks. If anything has proven successful in combating this virus, it's the wearing of a mask, and it's the keeping of distance. Now, I think New Hampshire citizens have been remarkably adhering to the fact that they wear masks. I think we should mandate that. I just can't tell you how important I think that is. And I'm in an age category of a high degree of vulnerability. And I wear the mask, and I'm a touchy feely huggy guy, as my colleagues know from my experience or their experience with me in the legislature. And you can't do any of those. But I think that the mask is so important that we should set aside some monies to deal with that situation and ask the governor. It would be my ask of this committee to support me in asking the governor to mandate the wearing of masks. I'm telling you that this thing is not over. The vaccine is going to come, but it's not going to come right away. They're now talking about December, January. And if we found a way to combat it, it's the wearing of the mask, and it's keeping our distance. And if you can do something, virtue of doing this, that prevents the loss of life in our community. And we've lost, over this nation, 150,000 people have lost their lives to this virus. And I think if you can combat it in some way, do that. So I ask my colleagues to support that recommendation. It's to mandate masks and side money. It's certainly COVID related to provide for masks for citizens. Masks have got to be substantial. They've got to be reusable. They've got to be washable. I know that we have some masks in our household that we got from we got them actually from Alex Ray, who's done a wonderful job of distributing masks free to people that we wash and reuse, and they've been very, very, very helpful. But Chairman, that's my request for the, and that's for the health and safety of every person in the state of New Hampshire. I just cannot express that need with enough emphasis and with enough commitment. We've all had friends pass away because of the virus. My wife just had two of her classmates at Manchester High School West die at the Villa Crest just last week. Husband and wife died within a few days of each other. But wearing of this mask, wearing of a mask, is so essential to protecting the life and safety of individuals. So I bring that forward. I thank you for giving me the opportunity to express my opinion on this. I thank my colleagues for listening. I just think it's very, very important. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator, and sorry for your loss. And I apologize. I read the request about masks as funding and masks for the Fisher Cats. I thought it was a related request, but I apologize. I did not mean to shut off too soon the discussion about the Fisher Cats issue, but understand that it's a separate, very important issue.
Thank you,
Representative Hinch. Do you have a question?
Yes, I do. So I read this as tied into the Fisher Cats as well, and candidly, it's been a while since I hugged Lou, but I think it's inappropriate for us to, as part of the Gopher conversation, to tie together an allocation for masks to a mandate forcing the governor to do it statewide. This does not have my support. I will not vote for it. And as Lou said in the beginning, people will agree with him. Some people will disagree with him. You can put me in the disagreement column. I think it's inappropriate for us to as members of the Gopher Committee, to use this as a mechanism to force the governor's hand on mandating masks for the state of New Hampshire. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. If I could just say I respect Representative Hinch's comments. I think he has a right to say, obviously, anything he wants, and we always agree to disagree. But I think it's incumbent upon me as a member of this committee to talk very candidly and very forwardly about the $1.25 million that's given us to deal with COVID-related issues. And if the wearing of the mask isn't a COVID-related issue, I don't know what isn't. I'm just asking the governor to make it mandatory. I'm not demanding anything from the governor. I'm asking him to do something that I perceive of as in the best interest of every citizen of the state of New Hampshire. And I think that's my job, and that's as a member of this committee, as a member of the legislature, and as a citizen of the state of New Hampshire. And that's my reason for bringing it forward here. I don't have another place to bring it forward. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator. Are there any further questions about the Fisher Cats? I'm sorry to mix those two issues together that way. One last chance for folks to have a comment about the Fisher Cats. If not, we're going to move momentarily to discussion about Massoma Community Health Care. I'm not seeing any hands raised. We will come to a closing, I guess, at this point on discussion about New Hampshire Fisher Cats. Thank you, everybody, for participating in that conversation, and we will now move on to the next item on the agenda, which is Massoma Community Health Care, and I believe we have several people with us on the line relative to the discussion of Massoma Community Health Care. We have Town Administrator Mike Sampson from Canaan, I believe. We may also have Mr. Thurber, Peter Thurber, representing the organization. And then I think we also have waiting in the wings, Steve Annan from the New Hampshire Hospital Association, who after this will give us an update or status on the healthcare situation in the state of New Hampshire. So I'm not sure who anticipates going first, Mr. Sampson or Mr. Thurber. I see Mr. Sampson has his hand raised. So, sir, welcome and thank you for joining us.
My appreciation goes out to the Legislative Advisory Board. I'm going to turn the microphone over to Pete Thurber, who is the chairman of the Board of Directors of the Health Center First.
Hi, thank you very much. This is Pete Thurber, chair of the board for the Massoma Community Healthcare. I'm just going to give you a quick overview of who we are, and Mike will give a little bit greater detail on our financial situation as well. But again, we appreciate the opportunity to present to the board today what our current situation and what our current need is as we try to navigate this pandemic as many of our colleagues in healthcare have been doing for the last several months. So we are a 501c3 community health center. We have medical and dental here in our facility. This is a 13,000 square foot facility that we built in 2016. We built it from grassroots efforts that began in 2014. We opened our doors in June of 2017 and just celebrated our third anniversary. In that time, as we have built our medical and dental practices, this facility was built to accommodate a large number of people from our five towns in the Massoma Valley, which is Canaan, Dorchester, Enfield, Grafton, and Orange. But we serve patients from the additional surrounding 34 towns as well. Our patient panel is currently 3,800 patients, which is approximately 35% of the population in our catchment area. We are a very important resource for our community as far as healthcare goes. This is a health professional shortage area for medical, dental, and mental health professionals. We have no doctors or dentists in these five core towns. If people want to get to healthcare, they have to travel half an hour into Lebanon, or they have to travel half an hour into Plymouth. We are right in between. About 30% of our population of 10,400, again, are patients here. We have a very high rate of uninsured. We take in all comers, people with insurance, people without insurance. And as of right now, about 13% of this of our total catchment area is uninsured. And right here in Canaan, where we are located, 17% are uninsured. 490 of those patients are Medicaid. 479 are Medicare. That's about 25% of the total patient population. We operate on a sliding scale, which means that for people who have who are uninsured or underinsured, we operate much like a federally qualified health center. We opened from the very beginning as a federally qualified health center lookalike, the FQHC lookalike, and we've been operating in that way with the intention of becoming a federally qualified health center. We currently employ 19 individuals. 85% of them come from the five communities that we work in here. We have two half-time physicians, a nurse practitioner, a physician assistant, a dentist, dental hygienist, and two dental assistants, providing most of our work. We have approximately 45% of our patients who are low income, and another 9% are moderate or higher. And on the FQHC front, we had been in negotiations to work towards FQHC status that would have hopefully occurred this summer in June. But due to the pandemic, we've had to delay that work with all of the benefits that come from that for up to another year. So while we have been growing significantly over the last 3 years, faster than most other places of our size have grown, we have really been working off our own revenue. We've been working off of donations coming in from the community. We're going to hear more about, again, what our financial situation is in a moment. But I just want to say that the community support of this project has been fantastic. And I also want to remind us that this is from the very beginning, a grassroots effort in the community of what this community determined they wanted to see in healthcare. We have no support from larger health systems and organizations other than some donations that have come in to help us along the way. So while we have struggled with COVID, we are going to tell you a little bit more about where we sit financially, and we're looking for some assistance. I'll turn it back over to Mike Sampson.
Thank you for this opportunity. Both Peter and I are volunteers. I'm the volunteer finance director for the health center. So what has COVID-19 done to the Massoma Health Center? Well, because of stay-at-home instructions and fear, our patient visits, like many other facilities, dropped almost immediately by 50%. Our revenues, as a result, dropped off well in excess of $230,000 in March, April, May, and June, and we still continue to lose money. We anticipate that the loss between July of this year and the end of June next year will be about $620,000. Our total operating budget is between $1.4 and $1.6 million as we grow. In spite of all of that, our population is still growing by 80 to 90 new patients a month. And at a point where COVID hit us, we were struggling to break even on a cash basis. We had sufficient earned income, but and revenues in the health industry are slow, to put it mildly. So we were coming up with a basis to reach a cash basis, and we had two strategies. The first was to merge with a federally qualified health center so that we could add the benefits of being a federally qualified health center. That would have immediately brought in about $400,000 in cash and benefits to Massoma's cash flow. Second, looking out for ourselves and trying to maximize our efficiency and effectiveness, we worked to increase internal cash flow during this year by about $400,000. That was to come from another 1,000 new patients, and as you heard, we're still bringing them in at the rate of 80 or 90 a month. That would have generated an additional $200,000 in revenue. We also needed to add a fifth day to the dental practice because we had a four-month backlog, and that would have generated net, after hiring additional personnel, $90,000 a year. And finally, by having full utilization of the medical side, we hope to add another $120,000. And the utilization was coming from using every opening we had and filling it with walk-in patients or same-day visits. And that was going to actually be filled by the new patients coming in the door. So with COVID-19, all of these strategies, except for patient growth, we either collapsed or were put on hold, including the merger with Health First. And the reason that Health First went on to hold was they had their own issues to deal with in terms of stabilization. They were much better positioned than we were. They had about $1.5 million in cash on hand, and we had virtually nothing. We have always relied on local donations. We've done it for well over 4 years, and we've raised roughly $2 million from the community, not from federal sources or state sources, but from the community itself. We have one woman, one donor, who locally has given us $1 million. We have five hundred other donors who have given us whatever they can. And it's important to tell at least a couple of these stories quickly. One woman who is currently 105 years old came in a few years ago when she was 102 and demanded that we take $2,000 from her, even though we advised her not to do that. She said, "I have to give you the money now, so this is what I'm doing." Another retired couple came in April of this year and said, knew that we were having difficulty meeting payroll in April before we received any funding. And he said, I can only afford $7,000. We have our own health issues, and we just can't give you any more than $7,000. I thanked him for it. He called me back about 3 hours later. He asked how we were doing. I said, "Well, we're still $3,000 short." He called back a couple of hours later and said, "Where are you?" And I said, "We're still $3,000 short for payroll." And he said, "I'm coming down." So he came down and wrote us another check for $3,000. One local resident who has COPD and terminal cancer, who has given already $150,000 over the first 2 years of the operation, came down in that same pay period and gave us $5,000 more. Beyond that, we received gifts of $10 to $100 online every month from people who want us to survive COVID-19. Even though all of our towns have got difficulties with COVID, two of our towns voted to support the health center in spite of their own pressures for COVID-19. So in spite of these powerful statements of trust, donations have dropped by 90%. And we think it's just a function of the economy. We've done everything in our power to raise money from the community, and we're doing everything we can to manage our services and fees to be as cost-effective as we can and to generate more cash revenue. But frankly, we're in serious danger of closing. Our financial need to assure that we're going to make it until next year, which we have to do if we're going to merge, we believe that the earliest we're going to be able to complete a merger with Health First is going to be in August or September of next year. So we have to find $600,000 between now and then. We're going to continue working to get in as much earned income and cash income as we can and to get into as much as we can from donations. But every pay period is the same situation for us. We're always wondering where the next funding is coming from. We've received state and federal funds like other health centers. Most health centers have received funds from HRSA, Paycheck Protection Program, state funds, and CDFA. We've received the following funds: New Hampshire Emergency Health System Relief Fund, $100,000. Paycheck Protection Program, $189,000 roughly. SBA Emergency Loan, $10,000. And Medicare and Medicaid payments of $14,000 roughly, for a total of about $314,000. Our largest sources of funds were from the Paycheck Protection Program and the New Hampshire Emergency Health System Relief Fund. The Paycheck Protection Program was designed and limited to 2 months, which started for us in March and is now complete, has been complete for 3 weeks. It did give us the assistance we needed in that immediate 2 month period. Other health centers, though, received direct assistance from HRSA because they're a federally qualified health center, and that assistance was 5 times greater than the state funding. And they also received proportionally much more from the Emergency Health System Relief Fund than we did. So that leaves us with what we've received from the Emergency Health Systems Relief Fund. We compared what we received from other community health centers, and I think we've noted in our presentations three or four examples. Charlestown, it's an affiliate of Springfield Hospital out of Vermont, has 2,200 patients, has been in operation for several years, and they receive $500,000 or about $231 per patient. White Mountain, which is a little larger, with 2,300 patients, received $345,000 or $131 per patient. Indian Stream, which has nearly the same number of patients we've had, except we've been in business a lot less time, only 3 years, received $500,000 or $132 per patient. Mascoma, which now has over 3,800 patients, but at that time had 3,700 patients, received $100,000 or only $26.90 per patient, or about 11% of what Charlestown got per patient. Even Greater Seacoast, the largest and most stable community health center with more than 16,000 patients, had double the amount of support per patient that Mascoma had. So we understand there's probably very good reasons for all of that, but it's to highlight the fact that we have only had assistance of the same nature that other health centers got, equal to $100,000. We also had asked for a minimum of $200,000 at that period of time for a two-month period, but again, we were awarded $100,000. Interestingly enough, or worse yet, we've also been denied the chance to apply for any other funding of this nature, either the Emergency Health System Relief Fund Supplemental Funds or the Nonprofit Emergency Relief and Recovery Fund, because we received that initial $100,000. As recently as this week, we were told that, yes, we would qualify for a CDFA loan, but we would have to immediately repay the loan if we got additional funding from the state, but we can't get additional funding from the state under these programs. So we're in a catch-22 situation now throughout the state, which is putting us in a dire situation. So we applaud the state's commitment to let no critical health system collapse. We're a community health center. We want to share with you that we've got almost 4,000 patients that are in danger of losing this health center. We want to share with you how needy these people are. The lion's share of them are people who have no other health plans, no other health coverage anyplace else. We wanted to share with you that we're doing everything in our power to raise money locally and to fund our programs more efficiently so we can survive. And we are currently barred from getting additional funding, and we need your help. So on behalf of those 4,000 patients and the local donors, please don't forsake our efforts. And we will continue to do everything in our power up to our last day of operation to grow and to provide our financing. And I want to leave the remainder of our time, which isn't a whole lot, for any questions which the committee may have. And if it's of a financial nature, I will do my best to answer all your questions. Thank you.
Speaker Shirtless,
Commissioner, my faith teaches that confession is good for you, and so I got to confess that some time ago I received an email from Mascoma Community Health Center, and I really didn't give it the attention it deserved, and I want to thank my good friend from McCain and Representative Tim Josephson for really bringing this issue to my attention. I think we all realize the importance of rural health care in New Hampshire, and Commissioner, I'd make a motion that this board ask for a grant of $300,000 to go to Mascoma Health Center. I think Mr. Sampson said they need $600,000 to remain viable until a year from now in order for this merger to go through with Health First. And so I'd move that we request a grant of $300,000 to get them halfway to their goal. Thank you.
We have a motion. Is there a second? Representative Walmer?
Yes, I would second the motion.
And did you also have a question or comment, Representative Walmer?
Well, I did have a question. I was wondering what the status is of the healthcare relief fund. I know that a while ago we had a report on that, and we were not spending, we had not spent down in that fund. And I'm wondering why Mascona can't go back to that fund for additional, for these additional funds.
Thank you for the question, Representative Wallner. I am going to turn to Lisa English and ask her for an update on the healthcare relief fund.
Thank you, Gary. Just very quickly, we do anticipate there will be additional opportunities under the healthcare relief program, both the general healthcare relief program as well as the long-term care relief program. So I don't have numbers for you, or even at this very moment a time frame, but we do anticipate those additional opportunities will be very soon, and we encourage everyone to certainly keep an eye on the website, and we're working to add some additional information on the website as well about past awards with regard to the healthcare relief program.
Thank you, Lisa. Senator Morris, a question, sir. Senator Morris, do you have a question?
Sorry about that, Gary. I never use that mute. I'm on the same line of question that just was asked. I had to call last week because some dentists got in, some dentists didn't get in. I certainly started asking questions about, is there going to be another round? I think what you're suggesting now is there might be one coming. My only problem with directly funding any organization is I think there's more than Mascoma out there right now, because I know I got called by dentists last week and it wasn't one. So I think these organizations are basically asking for another shot at it, and I'm pretty sure it's not just going to be Mascoma, and it's not going to be the two dentists that called me. So I'm wondering if there's a better way to approach this right now. And I certainly would like to know how much more money's left in that fund.
Representative Hinch, another question or comment, sir?
Yes, I actually was going to echo what Senator Morse just said. I understand we have a motion on the floor right now, but I also heard Lisa say that there's going to be more opportunities, and it would be helpful if we had some idea of, are we thinking that maybe 30 days away, 60 days away, because we could delay, if Mascoma, which is a second question, if Mascoma is going to be eligible for it, we could at least delay action until we know with some certainty what's going to be available and when it's going to be available.
Yeah, all right. We're trying to check on that number. If we can stand by for just a second, please.
Long-term.
Thank you.
So we have asked Steve Giovanelli to come back into the room. These numbers, guys. Steve, what does it look like for remaining balances in the healthcare stabilization fund?
For the standard providers, we've got $18,625,000 left. There are a few payments to be processed, so that's maybe a little bit less there. Maybe a couple hundred thousand less. There aren't a lot of payments in the hopper, so to speak. For the long-term care providers, the remaining balance is $20,123,000. And again, there's probably a couple, small handful, maybe four or five payments on the hopper to be made, but nothing huge. My understanding is we're heading for another round with those at some point, though.
So Mascoma would be eligible for a part of the $18 million. Is that correct? Or could be eligible.
So we don't have an official round that's in the works at this point, but we do anticipate additional opportunities, and we anticipate it soon. And in response to your earlier question or comment about a time frame, it's certainly our hope to be much earlier than 30 days from now. So this is something we really hope we have more information for you soon as we work through the most recent processes of supplemental and the long-term health care. We're working through that and then hoping to move forward from there.
Thank you, Steve. Thank you, Lisa. Further questions?
Jerry?
Yes.
I'm sorry to interrupt. It's Mike Sampson from Mascoma. Our problem is, even if there's funding left, we are currently barred getting any additional funding because in all the offers that were put out after the first one, it says you are ineligible to apply if you receive funding under the first round. So I appreciate the kind thoughts, but hopefully then that bar will be removed so that we can apply.
Thank you for the comment. I appreciate that. Any further questions from members of the committee?
So, Jerry, this is Dick Hinch again. Just because we have a motion on the floor, can we at least get clarification to help Mr. Sampson out? Will the bar be removed that precludes Mascoma from applying?
So if there is another round, and I think you've probably heard that we sort of sense that there will be another round, we don't know what the rules, eligibilities, and limitations are until we're told what those rules and limitations will be by the governor. So I can't assure you or Mr. Sampson one way or another. You're asking me to speculate about things that I don't have any control over. So I'm sorry I can't be more specific. Speaker Sherlock.
Thank you, Commissioner. Commissioner, do you have a tentative date for our next meeting of this committee, this board?
I do not. That is at the very end of this agenda. We do whatever you tell us to do. So.
Well, the reason I ask is I would ask that my motion be put on hold if we're going to be meeting again within the next 30 days and then take it up, the motion up again at that time. And maybe by then we'll have further information about when a second wave of grants will be available. Also, there may be some clarity to this issue of whether Mascoma Community Health Center can apply for a grant. And if they come under long-term or how they would fit in to any funding program. So I'm willing to withdraw my motion for now, but renew it again at our next meeting and take it up at that time so some of these questions could be answered.
Thank you, sir. Representative Walner, are you willing to withdraw your second?
Yes.
Thank you, Representative. So the motion and the second are withdrawn. I see that you have your hand up, Representative Walmer. Did you also want to speak?
No, I'm fine. Thank you.
Thank you. Senator Morris, would you like to speak, sir?
Not really, because I was going to suggest the same thing, because I think we need to figure out how many more groups like Homer exist also. So, I think we should take this up at the next meeting. If nothing else. So.
Thank you very much, Senator. Are you all set, Representative Hinch? Would you like to speak again, sir?
No, I'm going to ditto what Senator Morse just said. I it'd be good to find out what other organizations are out there that are in need, but also if we're thinking about the next meeting for this, by then hopefully we'll know what the criteria will be, and that can help out Maxcoma as well.
Thank you, Representative Hinch. And I just want to double-check, Representative Walmer, did you raise your hand again?
Yes, I was on the same track there as Representative Hinch, in that I would hope that before the next meeting, we can have a rundown of exactly how much is left in the fund and what the parameters are around allowing for people to come in for new applications.
Thank you. Writing that down. I don't see any further hands raised for questions or comments. Anything last comments you'd like to leave with us, Mr. Speaker, relative to this item which you requested?
No, nothing at this time, Jerry. Thank you.
Thank you all very much. I believe that then closes this conversation about Maxcoma Health. That we are holding a motion in abeyance until the next meeting, which we will arrange as soon as we get to the end of this call today. And we will be prepared at that next meeting to give you a rundown on how much is left in those 50 funds and what eligibilities look like, assuming that we get to a point where we have another round of funding for health care. Steve Onan, are you still with us?
Yes, sir.
Well, thank you for holding in there, Steve. I appreciate that very much.
My pleasure.
I guess at our last meeting, people just wanted to check in with you and see how are you and your members doing, sir.
Thank you very much for the opportunity to come back. I did share with the Gopher staff an updated PowerPoint presentation. I hope everybody has a copy of that.
It was distributed.
Thank you. I won't go through the full document. I want to draw your attention to slides 7, 8, and 9. But let me just sort of say briefly, you know, hospitals continue to be ready and prepared to care for all of their patients, including those with COVID, as well as those who are seeking traditional routine, you know, services in healthcare, something that's really important that we know people were delaying during the early period of the pandemic. And it's really important that people get back to getting the services and the care that they need. It's obviously important for our hospitals to continue to do that after we stopped providing many non-urgent routine services early on in the pandemic to prepare for the surge. That had a significant financial impact on our hospitals, as you all know. So let me just run down some of those things that I wanted to share with you in terms of the update. So the first slide that I wanted to kind of just cover briefly is titled COVID-19 Grants Provided to New Hampshire Hospitals. And it just lists the various grants that have been provided to hospitals in various forms, either from the CARES Act, the Paycheck Protection Program, from the Health Services Resource Administration, as well as the emergency funding from the State Healthcare Relief Fund. Since we last met, there have been really just a couple of additions that you will see. Under targeted allocations, the round two of COVID hotspot funding as well as safety net payments, that was approximately $40 million that came in to hospitals in the state. And then initially, that very first item in the first box under general distribution, round one, part one, if you look at your slide deck from the last time, that one's been changed from $100 million to about $97.5 million. It was simply an error in the way that we put that together. So the first round came in at $97.5. So if you look at all of that and you look to the next slide, looking at, you know, total expenses, total operating revenue, and you know what the variance from that was. In essence, what the losses were from March through July, through the end of July. Obviously, estimates for July. We are sitting at about $576 million in lost revenue. When you add the grants that have come in that offset some of that, we're at about $275 million in losses for hospitals. If you go to the next slide, you know, as we look and project out into the future to the remainder of the year, we anticipate that losses will continue for hospitals as a result of the fact that, you know, as we begin to reintroduce and bring back services, we're going to be doing so in a very deliberate manner, and we're simply not going to be able to get back to 100% of the volumes that we were seeing, you know, before the COVID pandemic. And, you know, we hope to get there at some point, but most, I think, experts not only in New Hampshire but across the country are saying it probably won't be until sometime in mid-2021 at the earliest that we'll get back to those kinds of volumes. So through the end of the year, projections would say that we would see, you know, about $740 million in total losses. If you back out the grants that we've received, you know, we're still looking at over $440 million in losses through the end of the year, absent any additional support. And I would say that, you know, the pandemic is going to continue, and the challenge that hospitals will be facing will continue to be great. And we're going to need to continue to work together and find opportunities to partner. But we're going to need, you know, additional resources to help get us through this period so that we can make it out to the other side and do all the things that we know are important to do in terms of serving our patients and our communities. I'll just add one last piece. You know, the federal Congress is working now. The United States Senate is considering the next COVID relief package, and it's absolutely essential that, you know, that package ultimately, you know, find a way to support hospitals in New Hampshire and across the country. And our delegation has been very, very supportive and very attentive to the issues that we've been raising, and will continue to do so with them. But, you know, we have a long way to go. The pandemic has not ended. You know, we're watching with a very close eye what's happening around the country, and watching as, you know, those positive cases have begun to tick up just slightly. You know, is that a trend? Will that continue? If you look, as you know, as happened in other parts of the country, when those surges happen, they happen awfully quickly, and that has a significant impact on the health system. And if we have more COVID patients, the likelihood is that we'll have to see some slowdown of return to traditional types of healthcare services, which have significant impacts on, obviously, revenue that hospitals can generate to support the work that they do. So I want to provide that update. You've got all the slides there that I thought were important to just have as context. I'd be happy to respond to questions. I think, you know, one of the questions that you asked me last time, and I'll just sort of end where we began last time, was, you know, what is the need that hospitals continue to see? You see what the losses are. You see what they are going forward. I still believe that the kind of support that the legislative advisory boards recommended early on of $100 million was the kind of support that we're certainly going to need over the coming months, and, you know, would continue to suggest that's really what I think we're continuing to see. And we appreciate the work that the legislative advisory board did earlier this year in looking at that and making that recommendation. We still believe that's an appropriate recommendation. So, Director Little, I'm happy to stop talking and take questions.
Thank you very much, Steve. Really appreciate it. Senator D'Alessandro, I believe you have a question, sir, for Mr. Annan. Senator D'Alessandro, maybe hit 5-star to unmute.
Okay. Am I all set?
You are, sir. Go right ahead.
Steve, I'd like you to comment on Manchester. Again, we represent a significant percentage of the population. The pressure that's on CMC and Elliott in terms of losses. When I look at your graph that you just gave us an iteration on, you're looking at quite a steep drop through the month of September, October, November, and right up until December. Well, translate that in a smaller sense to Manchester and Elliott and CMC and the burden that they're going to be under in terms of addressing the situation without additional help.
Absolutely, Senator. And you know, Hillsborough and Rockingham County have certainly been two of the hardest hit in the state. And, you know, the Manchester hospitals, the Nashua hospitals have certainly been hit very, very hard. Manchester certainly has seen, I think, the highest number of COVID cases. And, you know, one of the things as we start looking at these increased numbers of COVID positive cases, Hillsborough and Rockingham counties continue to be leading the way in terms of the numbers. So it's very clear that if we have another surge, that those hospitals will likely, you know, see the majority of patients. Again, our hospitals, including our two hospitals in Manchester, are proud and prepared and doing everything they can to serve and to take care of every one of their patients. But, you know, it will put a significant burden on them. And if they see an increase of COVID patients, it likely means that they will have to back off some of the other types of services that they provide because, A, they've got to make certain that they have enough capacity both in the hospital and in the intensive care unit, but that they have the appropriate personal protective equipment and everything else that they need to serve those COVID patients. So they could see a very significant challenge for sure should we see a growing number of hospitalizations. Thankfully, the hospitalizations over the last several weeks have been pretty steady and pretty flat at around 20 to 25. But again, if you look around the country, as you know, whether it's Florida, Texas, Arizona, California, when those surges start, they happen and they happen very, very quickly. So we have to be prepared. And you know, the kinds of losses that you know we're seeing, you know, could simply grow as a result of those challenges.
Thank you.
Further questions? I believe, Senator Susie, you have your hand up.
Yes, thank you so much. Steve, I'm looking at one of the charts in your handout about CARES Act funding and the 24 reporting hospitals. And I think what, along the lines of what Senator D'Alessandro said, I think what I find discouraging about that is that it seems as though not all of the hospitals have qualified for all of the funding, and it seems as though the hospitals that have most frequently come up short are the ones that have borne the most significant number of cases and, as a result, the greatest losses. And I wondered if you could just speak to whether or not you're aware of a different distribution potentially coming from the federal government and how, on the state level, we might be able to help to address the disparity between certain hospitals.
Thank you, Senator, for the question. And it's certainly been one of the great frustrations of the Federal CARES Act funding from the Provider Relief Fund, getting those dollars out the door. The second round of hotspot funding certainly benefited and helped those hospitals in the southern part of the state, including the two hospitals in Manchester, who have certainly seen the disproportionate number of COVID cases. You know, there's still approximately, I believe, around $50 billion or so dollars in the Federal Provider Relief Fund. You know, we continue to press and push at a national level to get those dollars out the door and to get those to hospitals that have, you know, that are bearing the brunt, that are on the front lines, that are seeing the most cases. So we, you know, again, we were very frustrated that that second round of hotspot funding took so long to get out the door. We were pleased that it did, but there needs to be much more that gets done. So, you know, we keep hearing that there's going to be another, you know, distribution of funds from that federal provider relief fund, but until those dollars come in, until we see how they're spent, it's hard to count them, and it's hard to know exactly where they'll go and how they'll be helpful. It's absolutely essential. And as I said, the United States Senate is looking at a COVID relief package now that absolutely needs to continue to put money into that provider relief fund, as well as make other changes to other programs that would benefit hospitals here in New Hampshire. So we continue to work on those things. And I think, you know, to the extent that, you know, as we look at the provider relief fund that is here in the state of New Hampshire, certainly the last round of funding that came out of that, around $25 million just a little over a month ago, I believe, was really targeting those hospitals that have seen a disproportionate number of patients and hadn't been, you know, hadn't received as much federal funding as a result of that. We think that was absolutely an important step, and we applaud that, and we want to continue to encourage those types of efforts, you know, going forward.
Thank you.
Further questions for Mr. Anand? I don't see or hear any, so thank you very much, Steve, for joining us again. I appreciate the update.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm happy to come back at any time.
Thank you, sir. Next on our agenda is Department of Transportation. Is Commissioner Sheehan on the phone? Victoria, are you with us?
Good afternoon, Director Little. Yes, I'm here.
Well, thank you very much for joining us. You have a request before the governor, actually, at this point in time, who has asked that you also brief the Legislative Advisory Board on your request, which is to provide funding to New Hampshire's two intercity bus lines. Would you like to give an overview of the request and why it's necessary, please?
So thank you for this opportunity to talk about the situation that our private intercity bus operators are facing at this time. If you will bear with me, I'll give you the history of how this particular item came before you today. And so when the CARES Act was passed, there was money provided for public transportation, and the state of New Hampshire received $39 million in CARES Act funding. However, when the CARES Act was passed, there was no provision made for private bus companies who provide vital intercity and commuter services within the Northeast region in particular. And so we have been working closely with the bus operators, specifically Concord Coach Lines, Dartmouth Coach, and C&J, to understand how the COVID-19 pandemic has impacted them. On May 20th, I believe it was, the Stakeholder Advisory Board took up this matter, and it was in response to their request that the governor consider supporting this particular industry. The department looked more closely at the financial information that was provided by these particular companies, and initially we approached Gopher and requested an amount of money that would have been consistent with applying the FTA CARES Act rules to this industry. In other words, all of the costs that we are able to participate in for our public transit providers, such as, you know, Coast on the Seacoast or Nashua Transit, Manchester Transit. Our original ask was to support these private bus companies in the same fashion. However, as we learned more about the CARES Act Flex funds, which of course have different provisions than the Federal Transit Administration or FTA CARES Act funds, we did modify our request, and the item that we submitted to Director Little for Gopher's consideration was a request for $7.5 million in assistance. I think many of you are very familiar with the services that these companies provide, but they are a critical component of our transportation system here in New Hampshire. Between Boston Express, the service that the Department of Transportation offers, through a contract with Concord Coach, with C&J, Concord Coach, and Dartmouth together, they carry approximately 1.5 million passengers annually, providing vital connections to Boston in particular for commuters going to and from work, for individuals to access medical services at Boston hospitals, and also to support recreational travel. It is extremely disappointing that they were left out of the Federal CARES Act. We were very pleased to see the support for our public transportation providers and to see support for the airports. But as I had shared with the advisory board when you first convened, there were two areas of transportation that we were particularly concerned about that were omitted from the CARES Act. The first being there was no provisions provided for lost highway revenue or toll revenue. And then the other item that we raised was this concern about our private bus operators in particular. I do want to stress that these companies have been extremely successful. While they provide vital services, they rely exclusively on farebox revenue for the most part. We call it farebox, but basically that's the ticket fares that they collect from their riders. Unlike public transportation, which is very heavily subsidized with local investment as well as federal dollars, these services don't receive very much assistance from the state of New Hampshire. There are certain trips that are eligible for federal funding, and we do have a contract with Concord Coach in particular to provide access to some of our rural communities. But for the most part, these are private entities that are extremely successful and serve the citizens of New Hampshire with their transportation needs. So we have been, like I said, working with these companies. Demand is increasing. So they were forced, unfortunately, with the low ridership and then subsequently with the health concerns to suspend service towards the end of March. Each service shut down in a slightly different time frame. There were costs incurred as part of the shutdown. And then moving forward, they were trying to understand when would be the appropriate time to start back up. My understanding is these companies did investigate whether the PPP program would be appropriate to help them out. But because they had to suspend service and furlough a lot of their drivers, they weren't eligible for programs such as PPP. And so we're now in the predicament where as both the state of New Hampshire has flexed open and now the state of Massachusetts has flexed open, and we're seeing really positive numbers in terms of the number of COVID cases in the Northeast in particular. Commuters are asking when these companies could resume service. And just being frank with you all, unless we get some additional assistance, it is unlikely that they'll be able to resume service in the near term. As I mentioned before, these are profitable companies who relied on collecting fares from their riders. We know that even though things have flexed open, ridership will be somewhat reduced if they were to return to providing services. And further to that, in an effort to keep the traveling public as well as their employees safe, they would have to practice social distancing and limit the number of seats on buses. As a result, you know, in the short term in particular, they would anticipate a significant reduction in farebox, and of course that would then impact the financial strength of these companies. But at the same time, there is increasing demand, and they do have commuters and other customers who are reaching out asking when they'll be able to resume service. And so that is the position that we're in currently. We have been looking at the CARES Act funds that we received from Federal Transit Administration, FTA, and we do believe that we can provide some assistance to these companies. But obviously, our priority as the state of New Hampshire is to support our own Boston Express service, and we'd like to utilize as much of the FTA CARES Act funding for that service which is why we have put forward this request to Gopher for your consideration. I've shared a lot of the situation and what they've been going through, so I'm going to pause there if there's any more questions, and then I'll be happy to explain a little bit more of how we came up with the request that's before you and how those dollars would be utilized. But I'll stop to allow for any questions with respect to the services themselves.
Thank you, Commissioner Sheehan. Are there questions from members of the committee for Commissioner Sheehan? I'm not seeing any, Victoria, so I guess it's okay for you to move forward with the rest of your presentation.
Okay. And so the letter that's before you explains how we came up with what we believe was an appropriate level of support, given how these flex funds from the CARES Act have been used to help other sectors of the New Hampshire economy. Basically, in March, when these agencies suspended services, we estimate that they began to recognize losses of over $16 million while still incurring expenses because, of course, they had to provide some base level of service in terms of being poised and ready to ramp up if they had to open their doors. I should say you can't just turn these services back on at a moment's notice. To hire back drivers, to get the buses ready to run, to buy the PPE that would be required to run service. There's a significant lead time needed for them to be able to get up and running again. And so, if you look at what they have incurred in expenses since March until this month, as well as what they've lost in revenue, and their total net loss is over $20 million. And then, as I mentioned, if they were to resume service, and currently, based on the level of interest there is from previous riders for them to start providing service, they really would like to resume at some point in the month of August. Currently, we're targeting the middle of the month. Previously, we'd hoped that it would be sooner than that because there are individuals who rely on these services. But we're thinking, because of the limited capacity of the buses, and with a reduced schedule, they would only receive approximately 20% of the pre-pandemic revenue, leading to further net losses of $14 million compared to the same period last year. And so the ask is that we support them in a similar fashion to how the funds under the purview of Gopher have been used to support other industries. Based on their net lost revenue, the ask is around $7.5 million in total for the three different bus lines that are providing primarily commuter and intercity service to Boston, as well as connecting some of the other rural communities throughout the state of New Hampshire. So the FTA did provide us, as I said before, CARES Act funding totaling about $10 million that could be used. But, of course, we also need to make sure that we are reserving adequate dollars for our own Boston Express service. So we really feel that support of this level is truly necessary for them to be able to resume service. And the other thing I would say is we are very concerned that if they don't resume service shortly, commuters who are returning to work as things have flexed open will start to seek alternate modes of transportation. And we really want to have a presence so that once things get back to pre-COVID state, these companies will still be there for the commuters that rely on them every day. To give you a sense of how these services complement our overall transportation network, we, as I mentioned, we're serving about 1.5 million customers a year, A lot of cars that are being taken off the roadways in both New Hampshire as well as in Massachusetts, making it practical for people to work in New Hampshire and to, work in Massachusetts, but live and spend those dollars that they earn in the state of New Hampshire. So we are very concerned that we won't be able to move forward as the demand continues to increase without assistance. I should say that we have also been working closely with our congressional delegation. As I mentioned, the private bus companies were left out of the CARES Act. Senator Collins from Maine did sponsor a bill that both of our state senators signed on to. We've been pursuing that avenue for additional assistance as well, but unfortunately, that has not moved forward. And then with respect to the FTA CARES Act funds, those dollars don't actually expire. And so not knowing what's going to happen in the future months with respect to COVID cases and what the demand might be, our hope would be that we'd have the gopher assistance to use in the near term and to cover expenses incurred between now and the end of the calendar year. And then again, we'd be protecting some of the FTA CARES Act dollars, which has no expiration, to help into the future, both with these private entities as well as our own Boston Express service. So that's how we came up with the dollar figure that we're requesting today. And again, I'd be happy to take any questions that you might have.
Thank you very much, Commissioner. Are there questions from members of the committee for Commissioner Sheehan? And I will let you know that the governor's office has asked that the Legislative Advisory Board take a vote on this request from Commissioner Sheehan to send a recommendation to the governor at the end of this discussion. Senator D'Alessandro, I see you have your hand raised, sir. Your line may be muted, Senator D'Alessandro.
I would like to move approval of the request that the item be sent to the governor. And is the answer to his request, is it not? That we vote on it and move it forward? We make a recommendation. Move the recommendation.
That is correct, Senator. Thank you very much for the motion. Is there a second? Representative Hinch?
Yes. If I understand the motion correctly, Lou is making a motion to allocate $7.5 million. Is that accurate?
That is correct, sir.
Then in that case, I will second the motion.
Is that the correct figure, Commissioner Sheehan?
Five.
Correct. That would be the appropriate amount for them to resume service in the month of August.
Further questions or comments? Seeing none, we will go through the roll as we are required to under RSA 91A. Senator President Donna Stussy?
Yes.
House Speaker Steve Shartwell?
Yes.
Senator Chuck Morse?
Yes.
Representative Dick Hinch?
Dick Hinch, yes.
Senator D'Alessandro?
Yes.
Representative Mary Jane Wallner?
Yes.
Senator John Reagan?
Yes.
Representative Aaron Hennessy?
Hennessy votes yes.
Thank you all very much. That's a unanimous yes. That recommendation will move forward to the governor. Thank you very much, Commissioner Sheehan.
Thank you for supporting this item. It's going to really make a difference to these companies and ensure that we continue to provide that vital connection to the Boston market. So thank you.
Thank you all.
Jerry, while we're still in the voting mode, those two items that I suggested, the Fisher Cats item and the masks item, is this the appropriate time to ask that we vote on those?
We can certainly do that now if you would like to make a motion, sir.
Yeah, I would like to make a motion. First of all, with regard to the masks, and it's a request to the governor that he make masks mandatory and for us to supply the funds to buy those masks. And I think the dollar amount would be around $500,000.
Is there a second on Senator D'Alessandro's motion?
I will second this motion. This is Donna Soucy.
Thank you, Senator Soucy. Representative Wallner, your hand is raised.
It was raised just to second the motion. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Senator Morse.
Yeah, I sensed in listening to the debate about the Fisher Cats, which I support the Fisher Cats, that isn't the issue. What this is an issue of a town or a city not having funding, and I'm pretty positive we've all heard from communities, local communities, that there's going to be issues about shortfall in investment, which is much bigger than the Gopher Committee. And I really didn't get a straight answer to my question earlier about the federal government saying that we could use the balance. I think we probably all would have looked at this differently when we started if we knew that the money could be used to balance the state budget. I think there would have been different votes along the way, at least from my point of view. And if the answer to that is it can be used for the state budget, I know I received on Ways and Means, and several other members received it, what the shortfalls are in the state of New Hampshire based on what the governor's office believes. And I just can't see that we can solve this problem. And it's not about the city of Manchester. It's about the whole state, because I know my communities are, you know, face the same challenges in a different direction down here with businesses that aren't going to be able to pay taxes. So I think we better be careful there. And at this point in time, I can't support it for that reason.
Thank you, Senator. We're really not able to give you a satisfactory answer to your question about whether or not the CARES Act funds can be used for state or municipal budgetary funds, because we just don't know yet what Congress is going to do the end of this week or next. They are, as we understand it, discussing the possibility that at the moment our interpretation of the CARES Act and the Treasury guidance that came along with it is that we are not able to use these CARES Act flex funds to backfill either municipal or state budgets, or to use the monies for lost revenues at the government level at this point in time. Could they change that this week or next in Washington? Yes, they could. But as of yet, they have not. I hope that helps out a little bit. Representative Hinch, you have your hand raised, sir.
Yes, thank you. So if I understand correctly, the motion that's on the floor right now is part A of Senator D'Alessandro's request, and that is to send a request to the governor that he mandate masks and also to appropriate $500,000, and I will be voting in opposition to that, as I indicated earlier. Part B of Senator D'Alessandro's request will be relative to the Fisher Cats, and I concur with what Senator Morse just said of the importance of the Fisher Cats, but I think that is something that can be delayed to our next meeting, which I assume is going to be August 26th, and by then we'll also have the answer relative to what the city of Manchester did at their meeting of Mayor Alderman next week, and the sense of urgency there is the payment isn't due until the next payment isn't due until October. So on both those requests, I'll be voting to delay for the Fisher Cats, and I'll be voting no on the Mass.
Thank you, Representative. I believe we did state the motion correctly, that the current motion on the floor is one part of Senator D'Alessandro's plan, which is to recommend or request the governor to make masks mandatory and to provide $500,000 for mask money to make masks available, I'm assuming, to anyone who requests one or needs one. Representative Aaron Hennessy.
Thank you, Director Little. In response to Senator D'Alessandro's request or motion, I don't think it's under our purview to recommend that the governor implement certain policies, but I do support his recommendation to allocate funds for the purchases of masks for those people who do not have access to them or can't afford to purchase them. So if he were to break the question apart, I can support part of his motion.
Thank you, Representative Hennessy. Are there any further comments or questions relative to the first part of Senator D'Alessandro's motion? Seeing none, if I may restate your motion, Senator D'Alessandro, the way it is, as I've written it down right now, is to request that the governor make masks mandatory in New Hampshire and to provide $500,000 to provide masks to anybody who needs one. Did I state that properly, sir?
That was perfect, Jerry. Perfect. Eloquent and perfect.
Thank you. One last shot for anybody who has a question or a comment to make on the motion before I call the roll. Seeing none, I'll begin the roll call. President Susti.
Yes.
Speaker Sherwood.
Yes.
Senator Morse.
No.
Representative Hinch.
No.
Senator D'Alessandro.
Yes.
Representative Wallner.
Yes.
Senator Reagan?
No.
Representative Hennessy?
Hennessy votes no.
The vote is 4 yes, 4 no, tie, the vote fails. Did you have another motion to make, Senator D'Alessandro?
Yes, I move the allocation of the $1 million for the Fisher Cats.
Is there a second?
A second.
Is that you, Representative Waller?
Yes.
We have a motion to allocate $1 million to the Fisher Cats by Senator D'Alessandro, seconded by Representative Waller. Discussion, Representative Hinch?
Yes, I would respectfully request that Senator D'Alessandro withdraw his motion until the next meeting of August 26 to provide some information relative to what the city of Manchester does in their mayor-alderman meeting next week. Again, the reminder is that the next payment isn't due until October. We have plenty of time.
Thank you, Representative. Senator Susi.
I had raised my hand to second the motion.
Thank you. Any further questions or comments? Seeing none.
Out of respect to my colleague, Representative Hinch, and knowing of his willingness to listen, I think the payment is due before October, but we will be meeting again when? A month from sometime in early August? When will our next meeting be?
We haven't really discussed that yet today, although I've heard somebody allude to the possibility that the next meeting would be August 26th. Would you like to set this aside for a moment while you discuss your next meeting?
I think, with respect to my colleague, I will defer based on the fact that we will meet in time this situation so that Manchester will have taken action with its Board of Mayor and Aldermen, and we know that payment, I think that payment's due before October. So get clarification for those and to respect Representative Hinch's request.
Thank you, Lou. And I would just say that my notes indicate that we were told today that there was a payment of $460,000 due in October and a payment of $460,000 due in June of 2021 for a total of $920,000.
Yeah. Good clarification of that. I appreciate that, Dick, and thank you very much for that.
Yes, sir.
Thank you both. According to my calendar, 1 month from today would be looks like August 26th, Wednesday, August 26th. Is that a date that is amenable to members of the Legislative Advisory Board for your next meeting?
Dick Hinch, yes.
Anyone have anyone not happy with that date? Hearing none, it's okay with you. We'll set the next meeting for the Legislative Advisory Board on Wednesday, August 26th, 1 month from today.
Thank you.
So, Representative Hennessy.
Thank you, Director Little. I just wanted to add something to our agenda for that meeting. I'm hoping that we can discuss the ski clubs in New Hampshire, the snowmobile clubs, and their shortfalls due to all of their different fundraisers being canceled this summer.
Will do.
Thank you.
Yeah, we can add that. And if you could, if you had speakers that you would like to have, either you could forward them to us or we can take a look around, see what we can find. I can contact Fish and Game.
I'll provide you with that information. And it would be through Natural and Cultural Resources, too.
Very good. Thank you. Representative Walmer.
Yes, if we're adding things to the agenda for August 26th, I would like to hear from the School Boards Association and possibly the Association of Superintendents around what kinds of costs the schools are incurring as they get ready to go back to school. By then, I think most school districts probably will have their plans in place and we'll have a good feel for what kinds of additional costs they have incurred in order to get kids back to school and get an education plan set up for the kids in our state.
Very well. We will end up. Since we're on the topic, Does anyone else have something they would like to add now? And you can always forward things to us via email later on after you've had a chance to think about it. Seeing none, Senator D'Alessandro, I believe the request was to have you withdraw your motion. As long as we're going to be meeting in time for further consideration prior to October.
Yeah, yes, I withdraw my motion.
Thank you. Seconded was by Representative Walner, I believe. Are you all right with that withdrawal, Representative Walner?
I am. Fine. Thank you.
And I will add to the agenda on the 26th of August also revisit the Fisher Cat situation. Great. Very good. Thank you. We are in the area of the agenda on follow-up discussion and updates. The next item is summer camps. And I believe that Lisa English on the Gopher staff has done a little bit of research relative to summer camps that were able to request funding from various programs within Gopher. Lisa.
Thank you, Gary. So I have some detailed information from the Main Street Relief Fund. There isn't an automated way to get the exact count of the number of summer camps that applied or received grants. But what we did is we reviewed the business names. First, we used the industry code to identify a smaller group, and then reviewed business names for essentially for camp while excluding campgrounds or camping areas. And so through that review, we identified 26 organizations that applied that may operate a summer camp. Again, it's not necessarily the perfect filter. But there were 26 organizations that may operate a summer camp, 19 of which received grants for a total of $3,158,396, and the remaining seven were considered ineligible. For the nonprofit emergency relief fund, we don't have that information to share yet. That process, however, is in its final stages, and I anticipate that additional summer camps will receive grants, will have applied and received grants for that program, obviously being 501c3 nonprofit summer camps. One thing that's not directly on point, but it certainly is related, last week the governor announced the Empowering Youth Program, which will use $2 million in the Flex funds to increase summer and fall programming for middle and high school age children. So it's administered by DHHS. The applications are open now. You can find the link on our website. And it essentially provides some funding based on the size of the program and the number of students served to operate day camps, sports, and other recreational programs. Because it's so late, obviously they're looking at these applications on a rolling basis to try and get things up and running as quickly as possible. But the funds could also be used for fall programming, be it an after-school kind of program, or in the possibility that we're looking at a hybrid model as some as schools decide how to return to into the school year. So again, the application period is open. It closes on Monday, August 17th, but those applications will continue to be processed. And the awards are based, I think I've said it, on a combination of the number of youth being able to be served. And certainly we're looking to make sure that there's a geographic location, diversity, and that it's serving our New Hampshire youth. So I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Lisa. Does anybody have a question for Lisa? Senator Susie, I see you have your hand raised.
Actually, it wasn't a question for Lisa, but it was for the next agenda, so I might as well just tell you at this point. If Mr. Annan could just update the information that he provided to us today, specifically about where hospital losses are and also any additional federal funds that have gone to the hospital so that we would have that information, I'd appreciate it.
When you say, thank you, Senator, when you say where the hospital losses are, you want to know where in their
I
misspoke. I meant to say what they are, the number of their losses, overall losses, and then for each hospital, there was a chart that featured each source of revenue and how many of the hospitals were eligible. So to the extent there's an additional source of federal revenue, I would like to be able to see that and what the distribution is to the hospitals.
Very well. Thank you. Representative Wallner, do you have a question, ma'am?
I do. I think this might be a question of Lisa, actually, or maybe you, Mr. Little. So earlier in the meeting today, we heard about the gap funding. And I was wondering if you thought this would be available for camps who were not able to get into the Main Street Relief Program or the nonprofit program, and were also many of them, I mean, I think some of them were directed to the child care program, but then were not eligible for that. Would the gap funding be a place they might be able to go?
I don't know the answer to your question. I'm sorry. Although I can't think of a reason why they would. Sean, do you have any thoughts?
Hi, Representative. This is Sean Thomas in the Gopher office. The answer is possibly yes. That depends, obviously, on the gap criteria. Some of the Main Street and gap criteria overlap, but there is some difference there, and I think some of the camps that maybe were ineligible will be able to apply to gap and will meet the eligibility criteria. I don't know specifically, if you're thinking about a specific camp or what the issues are or were as it relates to Main Street, but there is an opportunity there with gap. I think there's also, I can tell you, just in working with both Main Street and SELF, at least one of those camps that was deemed ineligible on the list that Lisa mentioned to you has applied for SELF and will be granted, and that was ineligible for Main Street, has applied to SELF and will receive a grant through SELF. That was an instance where the camp was denied because that camp was self-employed or considered to be a self-employed business, and they received funding through SELF. So there will be similar opportunities, I think, through GAP.
Sean, what's the application deadline for the GAP program? Is there about a week left so that if they are contemplating applying, if a summer camp is contemplating, they need to get on it pretty quickly, I think.
Yeah, the application deadline for the GAP fund is next Tuesday, August 4th. And again, if there are camps considering applying to the GAP fund, I mean, the best place to reach out is to BFA directly. They will know the answers to the eligibility criteria questions. And to the extent there are any questions about eligibility, we would encourage them to apply.
Thank you.
I appreciate that. Any further questions, Representative Waller?
No, I have no further questions.
Thank you. Any other questions from members of the Legislative Advisory Board? Lisa, it looks like I think maybe you're up next as well on the agenda. We're moving on to New Hampshire Child Care Recovery and Stabilization Program funding status.
Excellent. Yes, thank you. So, again, this program is designed to assist providers and programs for offering healthy, safe, and stable services as we transition from emergency child care to adapt to the COVID environment that we're all finding ourselves in, and to help programs recover and stabilize from the impact of the pandemic. So to date, the funding awarded is $16,237,700. That's round one funding to date, and then this figure may be adjusted as award amounts are finalized for some of the provider programs. For some additional statistics, there were we have 604 programs, and that comes out of 418 applications. And the reason for this these numbers not matching is there is a split. We split out and divided after school care versus early childhood components. So of the 418 applications, 416 have received notifications of funding awards representing the 604 programs. One program is still under review, and one program did not qualify for funds. In addition, there are nine programs that have not submitted their financial documents, and so that's something that DHHS continues to work towards. This has resulted in approximately 41,926 licensed or allowable capacity spaces, so essentially room to care for that many children by the 601 programs. Again, I'm happy to take questions on this if anyone has any.
Are there any questions for Lisa? Representative Walmer.
Yes, I wondered what the total request was from the child care providers and why the decision was made to not award all of the funds at this time and what criteria was used to fund this first round.
Thank you for the question. I'm hoping I get this correct. I certainly have gotten some information from DHHS, but the program submits their first invoice, and that invoice is 60% of the total award amount. So with the balance, I think, being billed into invoice two and three as the program needs those funds. So I might not be 100% correct on that, but that's my understanding of how the allocations have gone forward.
I guess my question is, what was the total request that came in from child care providers? And I wondered, again, why was the decision to have a round one and a round two as opposed to putting all the funds out there as quickly as possible?
So I can't answer the full part of your question. I will try to answer part of your question. Let me put it that way. So it wasn't a specific request, but rather a formula that was created by DHHS that includes a base rate plus $200 per child. And so that funding formula is applied to each program once DHHS has gathered data, confirmed all the required information and financial documentation, as well as confirmed the number of children in the program. Once that information is confirmed, DHHS sends the award package. The provider must then confirm that data, including, again, the number of children. And if correct, they then sign the agreement. So, and self-attestation. So it was a formula approach as opposed to individuals asking for particular amounts. And that formula was based on that base amount, which I don't have in front of me. I believe it's based on size, as well as a per child, $200 per child amount.
So in the application itself, there was no request by the department of the provider to outline what it is they needed, what their request was, their funding needs?
That part I don't know the details. This is about the funding formula. I do think there was quite a bit of gathering of data, and there were two parts to this. Certainly, there was a pre-qualification process followed by an application process. So I don't have the details on those particular, exactly what was requested in each of those. But as I understand it, DHHS took that information and in the pre-qualification and developed their funding formula.
So I have one further question. So we've done round one. where we used a formula, how will the remainder of the funds be used? How will those go out to providers?
So that's a question that I can certainly talk to DHHS about. I know that they're continuing to evaluate need, and there'll be additional funds going to providers. But another portion of what was presented to this group, as well as to the Gopher office, was not just the stabilization for providers, but also a infrastructure to be able to make connections and be able to respond quickly as we make our way through this pandemic. So there were three components, and I'm afraid I don't have it right in front of me, but I know it's on the Gopher page, the three components of what was approved in this program, with certainly the bulk of the funds going to providers, but there are other systemic parts of this plan to make sure we have a systemic approach to having a safe child care system as people return to work.
Further question, Representative Walner?
No, thank you.
Thank you very much, and thank you very much, Lisa. Any other questions regarding the Child Care Recovery and Stabilization Program status before we move on to the next item? Seeing none, one more time, Lisa. The next update is on the Housing Relief Program.
Thank you. So this one I've got some straight-up statistics for. This is the housing relief program that has both a short-term rental assistance program as well as the one-time relief grant option that's being run by our CAP agency. And so right now what we have is a number of inquiries sent to the CAPs is just over 4,000. And sorry, this data is from last Thursday, so it's a little bit dated, but it certainly continues to increase each week. There have been 3,400 applications sent to clients, and applications received at the CAP agencies is 887, and that includes ones that are complete and going through the final stage of the process, as well as a number that are not complete where the CAP agencies are working with individuals to try and get additional financial information. Applications ready for payment is 77. As of last week, and that brings the assistance to date at 258,960, which sounds like a relatively, it certainly isn't a high number given the amount of funds that are out there, but again, this program is just being operationalized, and we anticipate that number will continue to raise at an exponential rate as we move forward and as the CAP agencies get through these various applications. I'm happy to take questions.
Questions for Lisa? On the housing relief program. I see none. So I think we have, Representative Walner, do you have a question still?
Yes, I do. I'm sorry, I'm putting my hand up and lowering it all at the same time. So I was wondering, aren't we bumping up against some deadlines here when some of the renters particularly are going to face eviction? And I was wondering, are we getting this funding out in a timely manner so that they the resources are there to prevent eviction?
I'm afraid I don't have data on that sitting here today. I do know that the CAP agencies are working very closely with individuals, and that I believe they're also working with landlords as well. If someone is in process here to be able to resolve the issue. So I can look into that to the extent that this is something that information that we would want to cover in the next legislative advisory board meeting, if that'd be helpful.
I would request maybe that we have another update on this at our August meeting. Just, I know that I think our deadline, we have a deadline of July 31st for one of the housing programs, and it means that families might be facing eviction in August. So maybe we could have some sort of a report in August about how we're doing.
I would be happy to get that information if that'd be helpful.
Okay. Thank you.
Very good. And then there's one final item on your agenda today, and I'm not sure which one of us is going to be trying to work through this. The nonprofit, it's NERF, Nonprofit Emergency Relief Fund, NERF, is very close to, I think, making their recommendations for about $60 million worth of funding that will go north to south, east to west, big to small, all sorts of nonprofit organizations across the state. Nancy, you're looking at me as maybe you have an update that you can share with us on nonprofit.
Sure. This is Nancy Smith. As the director said, that fund is very close to being finalized as far as the recommendations. So I can tell you a slight update from the information we provided before. I think we had the number of applications received as being 601. It was actually... I think because a few withdrew, it was 596 applications that the charitable foundation consortium received. So, and I guess I don't want to get ahead of the process, but certainly by your next meeting in August, I would really anticipate we would have the results of that process.
Questions regarding the nonprofit program? Not seeing any. I think that brings us to the end of our scheduled agenda for today. Does anybody have anything for the good of the order they would like to add in? Not seeing any hands raised, so I think we're about to come to a close. The next meeting has been set for Wednesday, August 26th. I have items for that agenda already for a check-in with the Stonefield Clubs relative to their revenue shortfalls, a request that we reach out to the School Boards Association and superintendents as we meet. We should have a better understanding at the end of August what their costs for COVID response are as they prepare to open school. We will revisit the issue brought to us by Senator D'Alessandro relative to $1 million for the Fisher Cats. We would like to ask Steve on to come back yet again to tell us what hospital losses are and the availability of any additional federal monies and what the hospitals are getting. Which hospitals got it. And finally, a request that we do an update on the interface of the housing relief program with the end of the mortgage foreclosure eviction moratorium. And as you think of things throughout the coming weeks, feel free to certainly email us, and we can add those things to our agenda. Anything else, folks? If not, we will adjourn this meeting of the Legislative Advisory Board at 3:31 p.m. Thank you all very much for your time today.
Thank
Goodbye.
You, Jerry.
Thank you.
Bye now.
Thank you.